Hello and welcome to Mess Explores with Xavier and Alan, where as always we'll be looking at all manner of films from around the world. Now remember to follow and subscribe to us on your favourite listening platform as well as on Facebook, Instagram and YouTube in order to stay up to date and get some extra goodies. This week is the third and last of three episodes we're releasing where we're looking at Navarasa, a nine-part anthology series from South India. So with this episode we're going to be covering parts 7 through 9. Over to you, Alan.
Hello, Save, and of course, hello to our favourite fans. Welcome back to Mess Explores. Before we traverse the 9 emotions expressed by Netflix and new anthology series, remember, as always, our podcasts are best enjoyed if you've seen the film prior, as we contain spoilers. As Save said, this is our third and final episode of Navarasa, and now we're going to be looking at the 7th episode titled Imne, exploring the Rasa of Baya, which means fear. Now, this episode's directed by R. Rajendran Prasad and stars Siddharth Parabhithirvoth, just to name a few. So, the basic premise of this episode actually revolves around an ordinary day which turns for the worse when a stranger enters the home of a young woman. So, Save, what did you think?
Well, the guy actually looked like an Indian version of James Franco circa the Spider-Man years for me. And I found that the subterfuge was obvious from the moment she overtly stated that the staff had the day off. So I was a little bit wary about this film very early on. And this episode very quickly started to feel very contrived and forced. And ultimately, it was kind of going for this butterfly type of effect wrapped in the guise of religious mythology, which I actually did enjoy at one level. But again, as I said, because it felt so forced and a bit obvious where it was going, it kind of was a bit let down. So on the whole, I actually felt this episode was a little bit crap. And because it was so overly predictable, poorly acted, and way too much obnoxious crime.
When you initially said Spider-Man, I thought you were going to talk about Andrew Garfield because there is some resemblance with Siddharth and Andrew Garfield. But, you know, and I was just about to say, if that was the case, then maybe in a Marvel multiverse, Siddharth could be the new South Asian iteration of Spidey. But look, I certainly can appreciate where your opinion's coming from, and I sort of also share the same sentiments. However, just with this anthology series, I'm forcing myself to see the layered approach behind the narrative and almost trying to flesh out the deeper meanings behind them. As you mentioned earlier, this was the butterfly effect, but using thriller elements and a twist to it. I've had no issues with the acting. Yes, there is over-dramatization at times, and it does get tedious, but I really appreciated the attempt made by the two actors.
Look, I'm all for having deeper meanings layered within a film, but I do not for one second accept that having a deep meaning somehow exonerates a film from having exceptional delivery and execution, because there are so many films that do go genuinely deep without having cringeworthy acting sort of take hold of it.
Right, I see where you're coming from, Save, but look, I think this was an interesting episode which had the potential to be better than what was actually delivered. And once again, the concepts were sort of great, but the execution is a little deficient. And this pattern is actually consistent with some of the other episodes in this anthology, and I'm sure we'll discuss it at the end, but I'm digressing. The word Imne, which is the title of the episode, actually translates to deprivation or lack of something. And that's the concept the episode explores. There's tropes of honesty, truthfulness, loyalty, and other core values that one should sort of uphold within their lives. But essentially, this episode revolves around the emotions of fear and guilt. And this episode attempts to explore to what extent these two expressions can debilitate the human mind into acting or thinking irrationally. Now, Rajendran Prasad manages to weave a somewhat of a delicate line between the two binary emotions in an attempt to create a unique take on a horror thriller genre. Now, this episode does start with a typical thriller opening, with a stranger arriving at the residence of a young woman. Now, the episode descends into an exploration of theology and folklore while preserving the fundamental theme of never being able to outrun one's past life. I found this episode to be, on a narrative level at least, a somewhat more palatable episode, but also one that is open to interpretation. Farooq, the charming calligrapher, through his knowledge of art history, exposes the weaknesses and cracks within the character of Wadia. And there is a moment of flirtation between them which exemplifies this point that I'm trying to make. And I believe that this is to establish the disingenuity that resides within Wadia. Wadia is a person who has proven that she'll do anything for the betterment of her own well-being, and everyone and anything is expendable.
See, for me, this narrative lacked any finesse, but as I said at the start, I found the subterfuge obvious from the outset. This episode covered the narrative points in the same way someone may paint by numbers. It's predictable and results in a cookie-cutter type of film, no matter how complicated you attempt to make it. I do agree, though, that some of the deeper meaning it sought to delve into, such as self-interest and selfishness, were certainly there, and so too the themes of ultimately getting your comeuppance. But for me, the biggest issue is the fact that I couldn't actually feel Wadir's fear. To me, it came across as something closer to contrived patheticness than genuine fear of reprisal.
I have to laugh that you've compared this episode to Paint by Numbers. I'm sure everyone in the pandemic, or everyone who's been affected by the pandemic, is somewhat familiar with that with that hobby. But look, I think one of the plot holes in this film I've noticed is, and maybe you might be able to clarify this for me, Save, but is her husband that she's married to at this present time of the episode, is he the same guy who she plotted the death of Mariekia with? Or has she just jumped ship again to better fortunes? Because, you know, like, it feels like she gets the news of her husband has deceased, but if this is not the same person from the flashbacks, then how did he get killed? As Farouk would have not had the same guilt to manipulate him with.
Yeah, I actually wondered this myself, and I'm of the opinion that she subsequently married someone else, or perhaps she did marry the other love she sought, and he was also taken from her as some kind of punishment. I mean, to be honest, I'm just not sure, as the scene of her in the car with another lover almost felt like he was done with her nonsense and left her to her own devices. Maybe we both missed something, but I would suggest that if that's the case, then something in the narrative wasn't clear enough, and is the sort of thing which probably could have been cleared up by even something as simple as just showing us a photo of them together on a table, just as a passing element that the camera may have traipsed by, so that the audience at least got a visual confirmation of who her wealthy husband had been, if it had in fact been someone subsequent to the pseudo-murder of Marakia.
It's funny how when we first see her, she pretends to be this eclectic enthusiast of the fine arts, but in my opinion, I think she's just an investor. She sees the intrinsic values of objects and people, especially men, and then she reaps the rewards as dividends. Now, Farouk, on the other hand, delivers an exposition on the eloquence derived from calligraphy and their belief history. But he concludes a conversation by stating that where he's from, fate is unfavorable to people from that cultural background. Now, this dichotomy of characters sets up the narrative for its final reveal, because on one hand, you've got Waitha, who claims that Marakia has subjected her and her family to some sort of oppression, and then you've got Farouk, who's culturally sustained from becoming more than what he's destined to become.
Look, my feeling was that she was almost certainly a gold digger with questionable moral fiber. It actually reminded me of the expression, you can take the girl out of the trailer park, but you can't take the trailer park out of the girl. In the end, we're always who we always were, no matter how hard we try it with a facade for others.
That is true, Save. That is very true. But with that being said, Save, what were your thoughts on the ending? Does Wadir's death justify the death of Farouk's father and the suffering his family had to endure as a result of that? Or is the ending about taking ownership for our actions?
I thought the ending was actually a bit of a cop-out. The film was a victim of a writer trying to be too clever, in my opinion. I don't think it even came down to something as meaningful as whether it was justified, so much as it was just someone seeking their own satisfaction through manipulative vengeance. I feel that in the end, she was just a coward running away from confronting her true identity because she was a pathetic excuse of a person with a meaningless and shallow existence. So again, I think it ended up being a story more about getting your just desserts than anything else.
Right, because upon reflection, I did think, is this a cyclical thing that we're sort of seeing on screen? Because when you look at Wadir, the questions raised that is it because of her oppression that she attempts to commit fraud and wrongfully inherit these riches from Malakia? And then you've got Farouk, whose father had died and then seeks vengeance, but he himself has caused two people to die or to take their own lives. So will this sort of trajectory impact him in 10 years' time?
I think this is where I actually had a little bit of conflict in the story, because the story was set up on the one hand that Wadir was aware that, you know, through the spiritual arrangement that basically she'd have to pay the piper at some point. But it didn't take into account the fact that Farouk was not privy to that. He wouldn't have known that context, and I think that's where this story fell down. Because at a narrative point, when you consider the ending, if he's not acting with that same sort of knowledge, then he's not going to be looking over his shoulder to basically, you know, pay his dues when the time comes. So I think it sort of missed a beat there.
Yeah. So with that being said, Save, shall we continue on to the next episode of the series?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Now, this episode is the 8th episode in the anthology series titled Twinning the Pin. And this episode explores the rasa of Veera, or courage. Now, this is directed by Sarjun and stars Adarva Murali, Anjali, and Kishore Kumar G, just to name a few. Now, the basic premise of this episode revolves around a new officer's courage tested when, after an ambush in the field, he's tasked with transporting a captive back to police headquarters. So, Saif, what did you think?
From a technical standpoint, I thought this episode was rather terrible. There's some really nice shots in this film, but whoever actually did the grade on this film didn't do a great job. And particularly when we look at the day for night shooting, it was especially bad, and it's that much worse when done in full sunlight because you can see the shadows as well. And for me, this was just so poorly done and such a significant part of the film early on that really let the entire film down. The action sequences I thought were poorly executed. There was a number of continuity errors throughout the film. And from a narrative perspective, this film seemed to be more about personal convictions than courage, and therefore lacked any true depth.
Look, I'm glad you mentioned the color grading and the night shooting, because Indian cinema has a harsh habit of using these darn blue filters to simulate night, and it does detract from the film, and I wish that they would have a more refined approach or method in the future. Now, to get to the film, this was my least favorite of the anthology series because, like you said, it did lack real conviction on where the heck this was going. There was a whole bunch of useless chasing throughout the episode, rather than a narrative that was embedded with courage. This anthology episode has a deviously straightforward format, and it uses the character of the new police recruit, Vetri, which is played by Adarva, tasked with transporting a wounded rebel leader, Kishore Kumar, back to the police headquarters. Now, we've seen a plethora of narratives that have utilized a comparable premise, you know, where you've got these two juxtaposing personalities confined in close proximity, compelled to explore their contradictory ideologies. Mate, we've seen this time and time again, and a great example is the most recent film, Green Book. But if this is done correctly, it yields for great debating and dialogue and exposition, which is carried out through a depthful narrative. But when it's poorly executed, it just leaves the viewer distressed and confused.
This film felt like film students just trying to get their jollies and failing with technical elements of cinema at the expense of writing a decent story. And it's as though they instead wrote it the night before shooting when they realized they hadn't actually done anything pertaining to a narrative. There was ridiculous characters, hammed up, poorly executed action sequences, and plot drivers that were just stupid and which reeked of lazy pre-production. At some level, this film did try to cover some interesting themes, such as debating the merits of one's beliefs and why we do certain things, and the factors which may entice us to consider such beliefs. But my issue with this was that the theme was supposed to be courage, and absolutely nothing in this film truly pertained to courage.
So courage can manifest in various shapes, right? You've got the courage of taking on a new and dangerous role, or when you're fighting against the establishment, or even when you're waiting for a loved one to return. These are all, I guess, arguably similar courageous acts. And the episode sort of argues that courage in and of itself is to be celebrated, but at times irrespective of the purpose it serves. And now this episode does explore courage in the face of institutionalization, and I found it really interesting that Sarjun decided to portray the officials as just mere voices. He portrayed them as an embodiment of this faceless bureaucracy throughout the episode.
Yeah, but the problem for me here is that there's nothing courageous about just doing your job, and especially when it's done at the behest and apparent whim of an idiot superior, as we saw in the initial fight. You know, that's just the blind leading the blind, and not to be confused with courage. Going over and above or executing your role with exemplary acts, that may be courage, but at no point in this battle was there anything I would call courage, quite the opposite perhaps. And I think when you look at elements such as the wife that was waiting, I don't even feel that that's necessarily courage. That may be patience or tolerance or something to that effect, but not courage.
Right. Look, I'm going to give you another perspective on this because I think I agree with half the things you say and sort of disagree with the other half. So even though the concept is courage, rather than being at the centerpiece of this episode, it sort of acts as the MacGuffin of this episode. The film fails to convince the audience the true message of the word courage. And so we've got courage shown through the rebel leader, and we've got courage from the soon-to-metamorph Vetri. And finally, like I've said before, and like you've disagreed with me previously, is of his wife waiting for his eager return. But the blueprint of the previous episodes is that the ability to take a concept and put a twist with it. And the setup of this episode had potential, but it severely missed the mark. Now, this episode obviously was written by Mani Ratnam, who's, like I've explained before, he's a juggernaut in the industry. And knowing this, it does make the viewer reminisce a previous Mani Ratnam film, Ravana. And that's a film where one is left with the dilemma of deliberating who is inherently good and who is inherently bad. And in this film, there was scope to unpack why revolutions occur, what fuels them, and to showcase both sides. You know, you've got the wife that I believe is used as a metaphor for the families on both sides of the war who endure long, heartbreaking periods where they don't know what the outcome of their families are or their loved ones are.
Exactly. Look, this film looked largely at everything except courage because it did have a lot of these other elements. If anything, I would say it looked at convictions, and they're not the same thing. For one can have the courage of their convictions, something which we saw from the rebel leader, but on the whole, he wasn't the centerpiece, and therefore, unfortunately, this film felt confused as to what it was actually trying to achieve. For had they actually focused more on courage of convictions and told that through the stories of the rebel leader and the police officer considering why he does the things he does and what he truly believes, I think we would have had a far more powerful film that actually did look at a closer, more in-depth element of courage.
Yeah, this episode definitely lacked the coherence and the conviction that it deserved. So with that being said, Sabe, let's look at the ninth and final episode in the series titled Guitar Kambi Mele Nindru, which basically means to stand on top of a guitar string. And this episode looks at the rasa of love and is directed by Gautam Vasudevamenon and stars Surya and Pragaya Martin, just to name a few. Now, the basic premise of this episode revolves around a musician who hopes to jumpstart his stagnant career overseas, but on the cusp of his departure, he meets a vocalist who sweeps him off his feet. Save, what did you think?
I'm sticking to the Mr. Grumbles train tonight.
Okay.
There was a few things here. Now, one of these may not strictly be because of the film, but the subtitles for this one kept moving between top and bottom of the screen, and that was exceedingly frustrating. And this whole film felt as though it had been dubbed. I don't know if it actually was, but I have a distinct feeling that it was. And it was going for this sort of soppy meat cute, but it felt derivative, and the Ali song felt like a cringe 1995 music video. And this film had some nice music in it, I will admit, but it was predominantly the background score and not the narrative songs that gave the film emotion for me. So I got this distinct whiff of the entire film just trying to peddle an album of some description. So on the whole, while I liked what was at the core of this story, and I think it actually dealt with the rasa of love quite well, I was quite disappointed.
Look, Guitar Kambi and Mele Nindru isn't what I would say a conventional love story, and Gautam Menon puts his usual touch and his signature into this episode. Now, the episode aims to portray the kind of immediate, all-encompassing magnetism synonymous with love songs, and the entire runtime feels like a ballad with a pacing that matches it. Now, to be honest, I didn't mind this episode, as Surya and GVM are some of my favourites, and Pragaya Martin seems to be someone to keep an eye on. I feel like this episode looks at the concept of love, but it does it through the lens of nothing lasting forever. In between, things change, you know, and isolation ensues. But this experience teaches Kamal about love and about life. And I just would have liked to sort of see briefly what actually makes Kamal a good musician. But I can see why you found it a bit tedious, Safe, because it's one of those things where it uses music to define the narrative, and that can be a little bit disheartening for people. And now we get a framing image of Kamal speaking to an unknown audience. Initially, it's believed to be him just narrating the story as it unfolds, but only later do we understand the purpose of this.
I actually appreciate the little elements we got, almost as though Kamal was speaking to us in the audience, as it invited us into the story. But it felt at odds with the rest of the film, which seemed to want to keep us almost at arm's length. And given this film was also considerably longer than any of the others in this anthology, it made it all the more painful as a viewer. And in my opinion, at a certain point, I just wanted it to end. But it had its enjoyable elements too, but too many tropes just got in the way for my enjoyment to actually be sustained.
Look, I'm going to ask you a series of few questions, Safe, because knowing where this story actually ends, what type of relationship do you think they actually fostered?
My feeling is that it was almost very much one of those whirlwind romances. It may have lasted 12 months for all I know, but I feel very much like she was the stopgap romance that was his inspiration before he moved on to something else.
Right.
Now, the film did kind of tee it up in a way that would suggest she may have been a motivating party in their breakup, that it may not have been something he wanted because he was somewhat besotted with her. But I think at the end of the day, it didn't matter because the story needed him for his own future as a character to actually achieve his dreams and pursue them overseas, and she may not have been part of that journey. So I think she was very much that chapter in his life, as I think he actually refers to as, but an important one nonetheless.
And why do you think they didn't last?
Oh, look, I think there's so many reasons that you could come up with that's just not explicit in the film. It could very well be the fact that he was just an ambitious dreamer and he was going after something and she perhaps didn't want to partake in that, or she had a different concept on where she wanted to be at different points in her life. I think, you know, at the end of the day, unless it's explicitly said in a film, it's very hard to measure, because even in our own lives with people we know and relationships we see and even relationships we experience, we can't always put our finger on that.
Interesting to say, because this also leads me on to the next question, but I'll give you my interpretation of why they didn't last, because it's almost like GVM saying that this girl was put into his life for him to sort of be motivated and use this short relationship as fuel, as motivation to sort of continue his journey or to continue his musical journey. And I think he either wins a Grammy, or I'm not too sure about what the accolade is, but he obviously makes it big. And especially when he says that he's in an industry that doesn't actually promote independent musicians, and it's basically music for Indian cinema, he wants to break free of that mold. He wants to break free of that cage, and this girl is the catalyst to that.
Yeah, sort of his creative muse in a way.
Yeah, and that's why this whole episode feels like a romantic ballad to honor that trope.
Mm-hmm.
I guess this is just another way of asking, but like, what do you actually feel about the ending? Do you feel like he deserved to be with her, or do you feel like he will eventually end up with her?
I don't think either is necessarily applicable, to be honest. I think it was just a case of that was a romance in his past that had an important meaning for him at a time and helped him basically end up where he ended up. And I think that was the important part of it. I think if we look at our own lives, there are a lot of people that we cross paths with and that may have a profound impact on us at one point or another, but it doesn't mean that they see us through our entire lives by our side. And so I don't think it was a case of she would come back at some later date or that she deserved to be there or not. She was just essentially at a nuts and bolts level, she fulfilled her role. And I don't mean that as an intentional or vindictive type of thing where you sort of chewed her up and spat her out type of thing. It was just sometimes we just have a part to play in someone's life and it's a short part, but it doesn't make it any less meaningful.
Interesting. And what a beautiful way to wrap up a 9-part anthology series. So let's actually wrap up our episode. So say, what were your actual thoughts on this whole anthology series that we just reviewed?
On the whole, I quite enjoyed it, although I do think that these last 3 episodes were a great disappointment in the series, for which the most part I thought it actually been quite well done. And while these 3 final films or episodes didn't undermine the entire anthology, they certainly hurt it. And it was a disappointment because I had felt initially that these episodes were getting better and that they were building up to something and that the final 3 really would have been the crescendo of this anthology. But unfortunately, to my viewing at least, or my experiences and my perception of these episodes, they just really didn't do it. I found that the best of the bunch were probably somewhere in the middle. So I'm going to give this series a 6 out of 10. But what did you think?
Okay, let me give you my take on this, and I'm going to sort of give it a quick spin. Andrea Sacratino explains in an article that no aspect of our mental life is more important than the quality and meaning of our existence than our emotions. Our emotions are what make our life worth living and sometimes worth ending. Now, it's not surprising that most of these great classical philosophers had recognized the theories of emotions. Now, it's these emotions that Navarasa explores, and it's hard to critique sort of short films sometimes because the methods or the art of storytelling in short tends to be different from feature films. Even though Navarasa was an attempt to give back to the technicians and all the workers of South Indian cinema during the time of the pandemic, one thing I love about this anthology series is the director's ability to take a concept and extrapolate the meaning using their unique set of skills. Navarasa is a collection of 9 stories born out of 9 such emotions, and some of these pivot in a moment and some take shape from deep-rooted feelings, but the anthology series uniquely showcases them all, and this is why I'm going to give it a 6.7 out of 10 save. So pretty close to your score save, but a slight notch higher.
Oh, great. I think that's a nice little summary to that anthology. Thank you, Alan. So with that, that's all from us, folks, and that's all for season 2 as well. We'll be back to kick off season 3 next week, so tune in then to find out what episode we're going to be launching with. But remember, in the meantime, you can all let us know what films you'd like us to do too. Just drop us a comment on our socials, but season 3 is filled with all of your requests so far. But until then, we hope you've enjoyed yet another episode from us. Remember to give us a follow and subscribe on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, and recommend us to your friends and family. Until next week, though, goodbye from us.
Thank you guys for all your continual support. This is the end of season 2, and what a ride it's been. We'll see you all in season 3, and that will be next week. So like, follow, subscribe, tell all your friends, and we'll see you soon.